Vegas. Welcome. It is a Super Sunday Night edition of Heat Wave Sports. I am Tom Barton from TomBartonSports.com. Tim Unglesby joining me in just a few minutes. We got a lot to go over the next 2 hours. Want to hear from you guys as well. 876-1340 at Tom Barton Sports over on the X, at Tom Barton Sports over on Twitter. And depending on what you call it, it's at HW Sports over on X and Twitter as well. We got a lot of information last night about the trade deadline, Major League Baseball. I talked to you guys. I told you what we were doing. And I had a lot of guys write in their trade ideas, their trade, you know, kind of hopes and dreams, I'll call them, as opposed to lunacy, which in a lot of cases they were. I'm not going to lie. But I want to thank you guys for the interaction. You know, I got some texts. I got some stuff over on Twitter, on X. And then I woke up, you know, obviously I'm a little bit behind. I woke up and I got more texts and I got more Twitter. So it seems like no matter who you're a fan of out there, you definitely had a reaction to yesterday's show, who should be traded, who should not be traded. So I'll get a couple of Tim's ideas tonight, but I want to talk about the NBA tonight. I want to talk about some free agency. I know that we're going to talk about Bronny James. What is going on with him? I mean, I think we all knew. I consider Bronny James right now and the storyline behind Bronny James sort of like Joe Biden at the debate. And not to get political, but we all knew, anybody that was paying attention, knew Joe Biden was going to be an absolute disaster. I don't think anybody could have imagined that Biden would be this much of a train wreck. Right. I mean, the debate was eye opening. I think everybody, even that was a kind of on the fence, was just going, this is worse than we thought. And I think Bronny James in the situation is going to be like that. Right. I mean, he comes out. He looks terrible in his first game. The prop bets of every undercashed all over the place. If you're looking at it from that perspective, now he's injured. I knew it was going to be a train wreck. We knew the Bronny James experiment was going to be bad, but I think it's eye-opening in a Biden debate type of way of just how bad it's going to get. And I actually think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I really do. So we'll talk to Tim about Bronny James. We want to get into that. Tim has not done his victory lap yet about the Golden Knights. And this is not to get down on you Knight fans, guys. You know, I lean the Knights. I'm a Ranger fan, but I lean the Knights. I want them to do well. But in the consistency of Tim Unglesby and the Knights, this goes back to before the Knights were the Knights, when they were bringing hockey here. He has called nearly everything. I mean, I put my hat on and I tap on my back for a lot of the things that I did with and calling UNLV and what they needed, what they didn't do, how their records would go both in basketball and football. I've been pretty on point with that, with them locally. But as far as the Golden Knights go, I don't know if there's anybody in the Las Vegas media that has been absolutely correct the way that Tim Unglesby has been. And when he told you they were not going to sign, you know, the big man, the core is over, and don't expect that basically to be the last time you're disappointed in the offseason. Yeah, guys, I mean, that rings true, right? He was right. So he's got to do a little bit of his victory lap as well on that. We also have some NFL notes coming up. Look, we're sitting here and it's July 7th, July 8th, whatever it is, right? We have some time, but we don't have that much time, right? I mean, you think about the NFL and how quickly it just jumps on you. We are sitting here, guys, and we are, you know, depending on what day you're looking at, we're basically sitting here about 3 weeks away from the first preseason game. 3 weeks away from the first preseason game. So we're going to get into some NFL as well. So we'll do a little bit of Major League Baseball. We will definitely get into some NFL. We'll get into the Bronny James situation. But guys, we got to kick off the show with Tim Unglesby, who called it right again, Tim. Not that you're taking the victory lap with a smile on, or maybe you are, but you nailed it. You said it. I know we both agreed that he wasn't coming back, but you said it wasn't going to be the last time. You kind of called this destruction of an offseason, and wow, I think that even the most optimistic Vegas Golden Knights fan has to be looking at this and saying, wow, this one's going to hurt.
Yeah, Tommy, and if you follow social media and the Vegas Golden Knight fans, they're in uproar. Most of them are disappointed. Then you have a few that I call the smart marks, Tom, that they think they know everything about hockey, and they're trying to take the side of the it's good for the team aspect of it. And I'll start with this. Was there a victory lap? Yes, there was, Tom, because all the grief that I've gotten from VGK fans over the years about how I'm a hater because I don't support the team in the city I live in, et cetera, et cetera. I had to take a little bit of a lap, but it wasn't like you couldn't see this coming, right, Tom? The team was built up to win now. This franchise has never experienced a mediocre season. Is it coming? I don't know, Tom. Maybe. Maybe it is. They still have a lot of guns available on the offensive side of it. You have to hope that Adin Hill bounces back into Stanley Cup form. You know, last year, I wouldn't say was the best of years for him. But he's on the contract year, so maybe that's the way they go. My thing of it is more so that let's start with the big elephant in the room was the Marchessault situation, in that you have your smart business hockey experts that say they just couldn't find a reason to give him the extra year, right, Tom, or the extra 2 years to keep him there. And I get it. I'm like you. I get it. I understand that aspect of the business side of it. My biggest complaint about it, though, would be, I get it. Is he not going to be worth $7 million in that fifth year? I understand that. You still got three to four more years to get there, though, right, Tom? If you're gonna make a exception for anybody, do you make the exception for the guy who holds every offensive record in Vegas Golden Knight history? Do you make an exception for the guy who's the franchise player? You make an exception for the guy that was the biggest part of them winning the Stanley Cup? I think you do in that case, and I know a lot of people are going to say, no, you can't do it with that contract. No, you can't do it. Why don't you worry about years 4 and 5 when you get to years 4 and 5? If they won another cup in that 3 years before that, is it worth it, Tom? And we've talked about that before. Would you trade XXX for another cup? And I think Vegas failed in this aspect of it. So for as much as I agree with the decision, I also don't agree with it. And I know it puts me on a fence, but what say you on that? If they're going to make an exception, you make an exception for basically the guy that's been the franchise since he's been there.
Well, yeah. Look, let's take this back before I answer your question. I will answer your question. Let's take this back to how this began. When I read the list, and I did this right after the season ended, I read the list of free agents to be for Vegas Golden Knights. And yeah. I guess I ruffled some feathers when I casually was going down the list, and I said, no, he's gone. Just like that. I just didn't believe that he fit the structure of the team. I didn't believe that this team was going to keep him. It was just that simple. I didn't mean harm by it. And I didn't think it would cause the uproar. I got a lot of people hitting me up immediately as I was on the air and immediately after I got off the air that night. What are you talking about? You're crazy. Of course he's coming back. So I asked you the next week. I said, Tim, you know, I got a little backlash here. And that's when we got into the conversation. And I brought up the conversation in two veins here. Do you pay a guy, and this is what all organizations come up with, all franchises come up with this, do you pay a guy for what he did as opposed to what he's going to do, right? And I've been in this boat as a Yankee fan. Do you want to pay, you know, the Derek Jeters and the Mariano Riveras of the world? Do you want to pay them for what they did, even though maybe the best was behind them? And I said, yeah. I mean, if you're the Yankees, you do that. Sure, I get it, absolutely. But no offense to VGK fans, this is not Rivera or Jeter. Mm-hmm. And this is a spot where, yes, Tim, if there is someone you make an exception to, if there was someone that this kind of franchise would say, you know what, we got our ring, we're going to move on. We're going to be in a position where we'll do a rebuild, but we'll take care of the guys. We can't allow, you know, guys to go that the fans love like a flower and everybody else. We can't let them all walk out the door. We have to have some semblance of history and creating history. And then you say, what has this franchise done in its brief history to ever show you that? They let flower walk and people rioted. Right? I mean, people flipped out. Well, they got over that. And that was their lesson. And I said it at the time. I said, if they don't pay him, This is how this franchise is telling their fans they're consistently be. They will be the franchise that moves on a year before, a year too early, and doesn't hold on to sentimental reasons. That's okay, but we shouldn't be shocked. When they did what they did to Flower after the run that they had and all of that, they told the franchise, they told the fans, this is what we're going to consistently do. This is what we're doing. And then they did it again. So, you know, it's hard for me to answer, you know, is it right? Look, if there was a guy to do it, it could have been him, sure. But this franchise wasn't going to do it. They don't have a deep, steeped history. They don't have a guy that single-handedly did it. It's not like this guy was an MVP candidate, you know, throughout the year. They don't have, we'll say, face of the franchise. It's just not something that VGK does. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. Franchises exist throughout sports that succeed and then dump, you know, their aging players. I don't know if it's, if you call it right or wrong, Tim. It's just not something that I was shocked about in any way, shape, or form.
Agreed. And I said it on air. I said, they're not going to re-sign him because we know the pattern, like you just broke down for everybody, that that's what Vegas Golden Knights hockey does. So when it happened and you have fans crying all over social media about it, it doesn't work for me. And you know what the bigger thing is? Okay, so Marchessault is gone. When Stone comes up to right around that same time, right, Tommy? And don't be surprised if they move on from him as well. He's going to be around that. He's going to be old in hockey terms. But the thing that surprised me more so, and I guess this is a good question, is here's the question I'll pose and then I'll break it down. Tom, here's the question. Is the Vegas hockey team basically going to settle in here to a 1 or 2 year regression in order to have some of the youth hopefully play their way in and get more seasoned and take another run, and then they can add pieces to it? Or is Vegas just reloading as they go? And the reason I say that is because it didn't even take a day. It was literally all morning you and I were laughing about how every guy on that list, Tom, had signed somewhere else. Marchessault, Stevenson, Carrier, Martinez, all gone in the first day. And what did they bring back in free agency? They brought back a backup goaltender, basically, after trading away a guy that helped win them the cup a couple years before in Logan Thompson. So with all that, it was a surprise to see it all happen so quick. I could see as, you know, the week stretched on, right, Tom? You have a guy sign here, a guy sign. They all left the first chance they got to go, they were gone. First day, right? And I don't know if that was just the way it was set up. Maybe it's just a coincidence. I don't know. It's just intriguing to me to see all those pieces leave at the same time. So do you think, Tommy, that they're just going to reload? They're going to bring in another big name by saving all this money? Or do you think that maybe they're going to try to settle this in, save some money in the next couple seasons, and then go for it again?
I think they're going to try and fail to reload. Mm-hmm. In every single instance in life, forget about just sports, Tim. Sports highlights it, but every instance in life, people that have immediate success right off the bat, immediate accomplishments, smartest guy in the room right away, handed everything, child actors, you know, all of the guys that you don't have to work for things. They think that they are, again, the smartest guy in the room. They think that they can outwork the system. They think they can beat everything. And they learn very quickly they can't. And I think that Vegas Golden Knights right now and their upper management is sitting there going, hey, look, you know, we let the early team go when we got close and when we got back and we got a cup. We don't have to sign these guys. We can go this low budget, fill needs, grab a star when we want to grab a star eventually. And I think that they're trying to do the old rebuild on the fly, which we know in sports terms, we've seen that fail many, many times. I don't think that they're going to go a youth movement, take a step back. Although, if there's a franchise that could, it would be this franchise, because that building's not going to not sell out. Right? I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights have the luxury of, for the next 2 or 3 years, that building's just going to sell out anyway, even if they're a middling team. Not terrible, not a last place team, but a middling team. So they are absolutely in a luxury position where they could go with a full rebuild. They could go with a full youth movement, sell it on the fans. Look, we're going fully young. We're going to start a dynasty. You know, winning one was cool, but in 2-3 years, we'll be back. I mean, you can sell that. And they're in a unique position. Not many teams in sports, forget about just hockey, are in a position where they could go full youth and they know their stadium is going to be sold out. They know their arena is going to be sold out. There's not many teams. They can, but they're not going to. We've watched what they are about. We've watched them try to circumvent the system, get handed everything on a silver platter in front of them, and then do a victory lap that they were the smartest guys. No, we've watched it, Tim. They're going to try to rebuild on the fly. They're going to try to go get a big name eventually, probably not this offseason, next offseason. You know, they're going to try to go do that. And they're going to learn the hard way that it's not easy to win Stanley Cups in the NHL when you're not handed every single thing right in front of you.
There were rumors, and that's the thing about Vegas is always going to be in the rumor mill, right? Tommy, it's the place to be. Players want to be here, income tax, blah, blah, blah. All the marketing and variables you want to throw in there to get a free agent to sign here. But one of the more interesting rumors I heard right before the free agency season opened, right before the draft actually, was a guy you're very familiar with. And for people listening that don't think that, Tommy and I actually really do have a great knowledge of the NHL. It's just we don't talk about it every weekend. But a guy that you're familiar with and one of your favorites in Mitch Marner, his name keeps popping up in trade rumors. And, of course, Vegas had to throw their hat in the rink, right, Tom? I don't even know if there's any truth behind that, but somehow it always seems that when there's a big star involved, Stone, Eichel, Marner, they just get put in the mix. And if that's the route they're going to go, like you just broke down, and considering they just think that they can reload with a top gun on top gun, eventually that runs out on you. So all these people that are assuming that they're saving this money so they can go get a guy like Mitch Marner, I don't think that's the route that Vegas is going.
You know, I hope I'm wrong here, Tim. But the Vegas Golden Knights are going into a territory of the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
They're going into a territory of, I was going to try to pull up a baseball, one, and it's still too early there. But a team like the Texas Rangers, they're going down the territory of that. And I think the Packers are the best example of it. And we don't have to go out there and get Rodgers, these big-time players. We don't have to go get Favre, these big-time guys. We could just do it on the fly. We could go with secondary guy. We could do, and it becomes your undoing. Look, even Belichick, who me and you absolutely praise at every turn, didn't feel like he never. I never need a wide receiver. Right? I never really need that side of the ball. I never need to go draft a good running back. I don't have to do that. And he leaned on Brady. Well, VGK is in that kind of same position. Yeah, we'll be in the Marner information. Yeah, we'll throw our information out there. We're looking at him. We're not really going to go get him, but we'll throw it out there. And that's kind of what keeps the fans there. Look, if there's one thing that you could say beyond just about every other team in the NHL, VGK knows how to market their team. 100%. Vegas Golden Knights started to become a villain. They went full heel and that was what they are going with, and they love that. They have the marketing. They have the allure that people want to hear the moves that they're going to make. I just have watched this franchise since before it was a franchise like you guys have, and there's nothing out there to tell me that they're going to make the right decisions in this spot. I think that they've made a lot of right decisions, a ton of right decisions. And the Fleury decision was the right decision. Look, I mean, they get the last laugh. It was the right decision. I thought it was at the time. And I think that this is going to prove to be the right decision. But when you're talking about, the right decision as go back to the Stanley Cup next year, it's not happening, guys, right? And I think it's the right decision to not chase that. I think it's the right decision to give the young guys time to grow. Like you said, a couple of guys are coming up on contracts next year. Hey, clean house slowly and build from underneath. That is the right thing to do. I just don't know if they're going to do that.
Even with all the losses, all those guys leaving, right, Tom? there's not a lot of money left still. I've seen different cap projections between, basically it's between like 2 and 3 million that they're going to have. I know you have Leonard's long-term contract that's still on there. I'm not even sure if that's factored in, but I've seen between like $1.8 and $3.5 million under the cap once the NHL officially announces what the cap limit's going to be. That's not a lot of money. But I tell you what, like you just said, there's contracts coming due. And next year, projections state they're going to have around $20 million in open cap space, Tom. So I'm not expecting, you know, when you look at this team, the roster way it sets up, that's pretty much what I think you're going to get. And I'll say this, defensively, they're strong, right? Pietrangelo, Hanifin, Theodore, McNabb, Whitecloud, those are all fixtures in the defensive end. That, you know, five of your top six guys, solid there. If they're healthy, they're solid. The goaltending, again, like I said, when they gave Hill that extension, I was worried about that. But he's in a contract year, so that could be gone next year, Tommy. That's a problem. And then you have, obviously, the offense is weakened, but when you have the Eichels and the Stones and the Carlsons and the Hurdles, they can be explosive, but injuries always seem to find Vegas. I'm looking for a mediocre season, and if that means going to the playoffs and losing in the first round is mediocre, then so be it. I'm just my mind's like peaked. My curiosity is really scratching that. What are they going to do in 2 years' time? Are they just going to keep letting guys go and make a run at some of the big names, Tom, that are coming up free agency in the next 2 years?
Yeah, I think they're going to go with to go back to a baseball reference, the New York Mets philosophy when Steve Cohen basically went for it. Right. He went out, signed everybody. The Scherzers, the Verlanders. I'm going out. I'm going to go sign everybody. Right about midseason or so, you start to realize, yeah, this isn't going to work. He sold them for what he could, which is what I think that Vegas Golden Knights is in that realm. They didn't sell anybody. They're just parting ways. The Mets have basically openly said we're going to take a year off from competing. And look, you know, they have a roster that will stay right around 500. With Eichel and Stone, I think that Vegas Golden Knights will still be a playoff team. They'll probably be, I don't know, second, third best team in the conference. So they still have a shot, but it's that next year. The next year after this season, the next season, Tim, you said it, 12 guys come off the books. 12 players are free agents, restricted or unrestricted. 12 players. So the team that you just watched just this season, the last game of this season, that team will be completely unfamiliar to the team in a year from now, or, you know, a season from now. It's not going to do much this year. You have a lot of the same faces, a lot of the same players, a lot of the same team. We're going to watch a lot of the same results. They're going to win games. But that 26-27 season, Tim, that's going to be the interesting one, because in 25-26, 12 players come off. I think that that's kind of, I'm sorry, the 25-26 season and then, you know, the 26-27. That's where you're going to see the difference. 12 players come off. That's a massive amount of players. They're going to have to restock somewhere. I think that Vegas Golden Knight fans are going to be very, very happy if you have patience for this year being good, not great, and then all of a sudden, let's talk about what they do in the postseason and let's talk about what they do in the offseason after however the postseason shakes out.
Do you think Vegas will never play to subpar attendance in that arena, regardless bad they get?
I've said this all along, and this is going to bash Vegas, and not. I'm trying not to. I hope for the best for Vegas, and I think the best will be there a lot. But when the novelty wears off, and the team's bad for an extended period of time, that's the only way you'll ever know. And I'm not sure, this isn't a Vegas thing, I'm not sure that any team can survive through something like that. Novelty wears off, team isn't exactly great, and it goes for an extended period of time. Now, if Vegas is a middling team making the playoffs, but, you know, they're not great, well, they better have a star to come and watch, which is perfectly fine. That's all you need. Is that one guy to come and watch, right? And they'll be fine with attendance. But if Vegas goes out, and let's say in 25-26 or 26-27, we'll say 26-27, Eichel's gone, Stone's gone, you know, Carlson's gone. They lose their top players. Nobody really develops through the system. They lose out on the Marners and the Matthews, and they're not able to go get somebody like that. They've had two losing seasons in a row. I'm just giving you a hypothetical. Two losing seasons in a row. Yeah, I could see the attendance affecting them quickly. I just don't think that this organization is going to let that happen. They know that you know, they're right on the strip. They know all eyes are on them to succeed. The NHL wants them to succeed. I think they're going to be a big player. Look, I said this, and this is going to be out of left field, but I told everybody this during the playoffs. I said, I think McDavid is going to pull a Gretzky eventually. He's going to play in America. His brand is too big. Not that he's going to get sick of losing with Edmonton, which probably he will, but his brand is too big. He wants to go two ways. If there's a spot for him, you don't think Vegas would open everything up for a guy like a McDavid, for a guy like a Matthews maybe, for a guy, you know, a big-name star? And if they're a middling team, Tim, and they're a good team, but they have a star, they won't worry about attendance. I don't think that they – I really don't believe that we will even have an attendance conversation probably for the duration of me and you being on the air, which is, you know, God willing, another 10, 15 years, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that we're ever going to see a Vegas attendance problem while we're on the air.
No. You have an owner that's going to spend money, that's going to try to reload all the time, work the cap up to the bone if they have to do it, which we've seen them do. They're in a spot where people pay, like you said, people pay ridiculous amounts of money just to go watch the team. They're not, most of them aren't even fans. They're just there to hang out, it seems like. But that's okay. You know, it is what it is. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out with Vegas, Tommy, and how they can maneuver in bringing in top stars once these stars are all washed up and moved on. That's what they do, right? Use them and move them.
They have the stars for a while, though. I mean, Eichel becomes an unrestricted free agent in 26-27. Stone becomes an unrestricted free agent in 27-28. I mean, they have it. Carlson and... if you want to consider him a star at this point, I think, you know, he should be 27, 28. They have some seasons to develop some guys. They're just going to have to develop.
Tommy Barton, Tim Unglesby, Super Sunday Night edition of Heatwave Sports. We're going to go around the world of sports tonight. I think, Tom, when we come back, we'll head into the NBA. This ought to be fun as we do a little Bronny James action on the other side of it. It's Heatwave Sports here on Fox Sports Radio. Wave Sports, Fox Sports Radio, Las Vegas. Every weekend you can find us 10 midnight right here on 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, social media at Tom Barton Sports, at HW Sports as well. We have the Vegas Summer League starting up next week, Tom, but there are a couple tournaments, I guess you can call them, beforehand. Salt Lake usually has one. I believe that's middle of this week. And then they had called it the California Classic this past weekend, Tommy, with six NBA teams. Of course, the talk of the whole thing was LeBron Jr. I'll let you go ahead and start and set this up for... what should be interesting, because we were both, I'm sure there's many people that agree with us on this, that it just isn't right. Let's just put it that way, and we'll break it down why. This just isn't right.
Oh, it's right. It's beautifully right. Look, I have been a LeBron hater for a while. I have been on the anti-LeBron bandwagon, trying to show everyone. By the way, same bandwagon I was on with Aaron Rodgers before, you know, that all kind of came out. And show everybody just what a horrible person this guy is, and even more so just, you know, the overratedness gets laughable at times, but the things that he does off the court is just deplorable, to use a Hillary term, right? It's just deplorable. And this is just another line of it. Look, I feel bad for Bronny James. I really do. There's a lot that I feel bad for him with because I think that there's a lot of undue pressure. But in the same respect, look, the only reason he's here is because of the same reason I feel bad for him, right? I mean, there's a lot of guys that could have taken this chance. He went to the NBA, went to the spot where we all knew he was going to go. You said it to me. You texted it to me. You said nepotism. I said, it's not even I agree. It's not even just nepotism. It's nepotism in your face. You know, they're not even trying to hire. LeBron James is laughing at everyone and saying, I'll do whatever I want to do. And he's laughing at the Lakers. Or he has taken the Lakers organization, which I have no love for. And he's made them a laughingstock. The Lakers are a joke. The Lakers were once the organization, the franchise that people wanted to aspire to be. They were one of the best run and most successful franchises in all of sports. They're a laughingstock. They're a butt of jokes. They are forever now LeBron's team. There's no management. There's no Kareem magic. There's no aura left. No, it's LeBron. LeBron's failures, which are complete. It is just a complete LeBron James joke. And it's added to it now with bringing his son on. Selecting his son where his team, look, they need, you know, they need plenty. Instead, he's selecting your son. Okay, look, you want to play with him? I understand the guys that are saying, look, I got to respect the idea that he hung around and he wants to play with his son. And the idea that, you know what, I have been one of the best players of all time, and I want to push the idea. Okay, that's fine. Sign him as a free agent. Put him as a 12th man, last guy on the bench that never gets, you know, a shot. Put him in there for a couple of games of the year, and you get to play with him. I would have been fine. Look, I still would have been like, it's ridiculous, but I would have been fine with it. But to have LeBron hype him up, make the team draft him, which nobody else is drafting him, to be in a position like that, Tim, this is when it gets crazy. And I called at the beginning of the show, I said, the Bronny James situation is like Joe Biden on the debate stage, where we knew it was going to be bad, but I don't think we thought it was going to be that bad. I don't think everybody that's been following it knew, look, you know, if you've ever seen Biden and what he's done, we knew he was a disaster. I don't think anybody expected him to be that much of a disaster. Well, Bronny's the same thing. He comes out and you go, all right, look, maybe the kid could play a little. His shooting percentage was terrible. Now he's already injured. It's been learned that his dad took a $3 million pay cut to keep the Lakers under, you know, this cap limit, yet they signed his son. So basically he's paying his son. I mean, whoo, the nepotism goes deep in this one. And I couldn't be happier to see it to happen to this franchise. I've never been a Lakers fan. I certainly never been a LeBron fan. And people are starting to open up their eyes to what kind of person LeBron is.
It's a slap in the face to, like you said, it's a playground. It's his own personal playground. They had a list, Tom, that came out right after the draft. And we knew this was going to happen, right? They told us this was going to happen months before. They said that LeBron wants to play with his son. Don't be surprised if they draft him. And people are just laughing about it, like, why would you draft the guy? Look at what did he do in his freshman year? Nothing, right? He needs to develop as a player. And I'm not even saying, you know, it's bad enough for the kid that he has a father like that that he has to try to live up to. It's worse now, though. Like, how is he looked at in the locker room, Tom? Or are they just bringing in LeBron's guys? That way everything's okay. It's fine, right? You know.
Well, I think J.J. Redick will tell you that, yeah, yes, they're bringing in LeBron's guys.
Make it easy on the kid, right? You're making it hard on the guy. And the problem that I have the most of it was there was a list that was released of it. I think it was like 12 guys that didn't get drafted, Tom, that statistically were way better and had major roles on their college teams than Bronny James. But this was a power play. You got to keep LeBron there, right? I'll do the respectable thing, Tom. I'll take one for the team, and I'll take only $48 million instead of 51 in order to keep, you know, keep us under the cap so we can help the team out. You mean help pay your son's salary that he got signed as a second round draft pick? Unbelievable. And the fact that it's a charade that just allowed to happen. This would have never happened. I'll go 10 years, but you know damn well it would have never happened in the 80s and 90s. Like, this stuff, it's unbelievable. the way that he is allowed to dictate what happens in this league. Yet he has done nothing, Tom, other than pad his stats. You love stat compilers, right? You love bringing them up. He's done nothing but pad his stats for the last, what, 7-8 years? And yes, I'm including the Chris Wynn infamous bubble title that he likes to say is it counts. It may count on paper, but we all know it doesn't count, Chris Wynn. You agree with us on that. It's unbelievable that he's allowed to dictate how this league is run. And that's why the league, honestly, Tom, as fun as that it was for me to watch the championship series, the Celtics win, we're still talking about a league that's a disgrace when it comes to the four professional leagues that are going out there.
You know, I would think we would all feel different, Tim. Maybe it would still be ridiculous, but I think we'd all feel different if LeBron came in. How long has he been with the Lakers now? 5 years?
I want to say a little more than that, right?
Has he been longer than? Jeez, oh wow! I'm trying to find it because I'm trying to make a point, and I don't know how long LeBron's been. I keep losing years because I'm sorry, guys. I really do. I lose years because of COVID. I never know what years are what because of the COVID situation. So he's been
they won the Lakers COVID title. Yeah.
He's been with the Lakers 6 years. So it would be different, Tim, if he won three titles in 6 years. Coming off of back-to-back titles. And you go, you know what? Look at what the guy's done. Yeah, sure. Bring your son on. Who cares? But I've mentioned this before he brought his son on. LeBron James' legacy in L.A. is that of failure. Utter and complete failure. And anybody that wants to bring up the COVID championship, you know, a guy won the hot dog eating contest at Coney Island on July 4th, right? Joey Chestnut was not invited. I was not the only one. I put this out on Twitter and saw it happen about 25 other times, people saying, yeah, that guy's championship's about as real as the LeBron championship. Like, yeah, he won it, but come on. You know, we know you're nowhere near Joey Chestnut. It's just complete failure. So the Laker fans had to endure him getting rid of coaches. The Laker fans had to endure him getting rid of players, handpicking players, sitting down, and just losing after losing after losing, failure after failure after failure after failure, turning their once proud franchise into an absolute laughingstock. They're a joke. They are literally the punchline of jokes. That's what the Lakers are. And now, to put the cherry on top of the failure and the jokes that he has made that franchise, now what do we have, Tim? Oh, by the way, the biggest case of nepotism that we've ever seen in sports. And that's not hyperbole. That is absolutely true. The biggest case of nepotism combined with a 6-year just misery streak and dragging the Lakers down from GM moves to coaching moves to player personnel moves, to his own play on the court. LeBron James is an abject failure with the Los Angeles Lakers, and this just puts the cherry on top.
And this is no good for Bronny, right? What's going to happen, Tom, when we've already, like you said, we saw first game, all the websites and the highlights, they want to talk about his great first shot, making the best. He can do anything the rest of the game, Tom. He scored 4 points. His shooting was terrible. He got crossed up, and now he's hurt, like you said. What a great start, though, for Bronny James. What a great start. He did nothing. And this is against basically guys that aren't going to be in the league, Tom, right? Most of them aren't going to be in the league. So what's going to happen now when they're playing here in Vegas in a couple weeks and the competition steps up more? What happens in the beginning of the season? Is he just going to ride the pine all year? He should. He's not going to crack. He can't crack a rotation, right? He's not good enough to. I just don't understand, other than for his dad's sake, what this is doing to help the Laker organization. And you know what? Honestly, Tom, if he at this point, how much better can he get? I don't think he can, because he's not that good to begin with, right? I mean, easy for me to say. He could definitely take me out in a basketball game, but I'm just saying, he's never really that good to begin with, was he?
No, and Tim, you don't have to qualify it like that. You know, a lot of people do that on Sports Talk Radio. Come on, well, he could beat you. Yeah, okay. But when I'm judging a supermodel contest, okay, I'm going to judge them up against other supermodels. I'm not judging it against, you know, the girlfriend I had when I was 22 years old, guys. Come on, right? You judge against what their competitors are. So, yes, when you're saying LeBron James' son, Bronny, is bad at basketball, Tim, that's not what you said. I'm saying it. It's compared to his counterparts that are in the NBA. He is, I don't think it's hard to say, and I don't think I would get a lot of pushback on saying, he's one of the worst players in the league. Right? I mean, he may be the worst player in the league. It's possible. Time will tell. But I think that you hit on a great point where his ceiling is even low. The one thing I did see, and I'll give a lot of credit to the overreaction that I had because I was grinning. I said, the Lakers are going to be stuck with him. And I saw somebody say, hey, Laker fans, don't worry. The minute LeBron retires, Bronny's contract is gone too. And that'll tell you all you need to know. Look, if LeBron James was named Bronny James was named Bronny Jones, guys, he wouldn't be drafted. He wouldn't be in there. It's just that simple, right? I'm not even sure if he'd be playing upper-level college basketball. He would have been probably playing for a middling school somewhere. So, no, this is a spot where LeBron has further damaged the franchise. And to Chris Wynn's point, because he said, you know, come on, guys, it's mediocre. It's not abject failure. Yes, it is. It's failure because of what they've become. They brought LeBron James in to restore. If you remember the talk about restoring the Lakers and, you know, continuing the legacy. He's got zero championships with the Lakers. He has fired multiple coaches. He had made bad GM moves. And what he has shown the sports world is that the Lakers ownership, Lakers brass, Lakers management, and Lakers all the way down to every single last person, they mean nothing. He runs the show. And I'll go a step further and say he basically runs the NBA. I mean, I wouldn't go too far in saying that I think that LeBron James is bigger than the NBA in his mind. And we all saw this being a failure. This is epic proportions, Tim. There's no way if Bronny turns around and he's awful, the Lakers can't get rid of him. The Lakers can't cut him. I mean, there's nothing that he can do to get the exit off the team. His father is there, which means he is there, which means you have two spots on your team forever until they decide to leave. He's bigger than the franchise, and at this point, he thinks he's bigger than the sport.
I think it is LeBron James Jr., isn't it? Doesn't his jersey say James Jr. on it?
Yeah, and they just keep calling him Bronny. I don't think he likes to be called James Jr. or whatever, so I don't want to do that. Like I said, I actually feel bad for the kid in a way. I mean, yes, he's been handed everything in life, but in a way, I feel bad for him because even if he was gets to be a starter level kind of guy or a guy, you know, six man off the bench and he's a solid player, everybody will just be like, look, you know, you're not your dad. Like, even if he earns his way and he winds up being a competent player, you know, he'll still have that. He's got to become an all-star to quiet these rumors. And even at an all-star, he'll even still probably get the comparison.
And how do you hurt yourself after one game? Come on, man. I saw this on social media, and you can't think that it's fathomable that this would happen, but with LeBron James, it is. Tom, you know he has another son, right? Bryce James.
Oh, yes.
He's a junior, I think, in high school, right? What's the stop? 2-3 years down the road, this happening again, and it has them all on the same. They have the whole family on the team. People laugh about it, but that very well could happen. I mean, if LeBron can hang on for long enough, that could happen, Tom. No joke.
Oof. How many years do you think, Tim?
Well, I think he's a junior in high school. So, I mean, you don't have to go to college. You can draft him out of high school, right? They can.
No, I think don't they have to go to college? Oh, well, no.
Is it one?
I think they got to go to college 1 year. So three years away, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
He could play with his dad in 3 years. LeBron's 39. Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Oh, it's happening. Oh, it's happening. Oh, it's happening. Oh, I love it. It's absolutely happening. You don't even have to say maybe. That's what's going on. I didn't even realize it. Yeah, that's what's going on, Tim.
Unbelievable.
He just signed a 2-year extension. Maybe he doesn't play for the Lakers if the Lakers can't stand LeBron after that. He's playing somewhere. LeBron's playing at 42 years old because he wants every damn record with the compiling stats that he gets. He's playing for 3 more. He's playing until he's 42. Mm-hmm. And he's playing with his sons. He's going to play with both of them. And he's going to have – there's going to be one game, probably like his last game out there. He'll have like the John Cena tour, goodbye tour, whatever. He'll announce it. And the last game, it'll be, you know – it'll be like an all-star game. They'll pull everyone off the court, you know, on defense, and Bronny will pass it to his other son, which will alley-oop it to Dad, who will get on a step stool, you know, with his creaky knees and slam it down. And everyone will go, oh, isn't that a great moment? Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah, script is written. Done.
Yep.
You know LeBron's all about script. He doesn't care about basketball anymore. He's about Hollywood. There it is. Hollywood script. Done.
Tom, it's unbelievable, but very believable.
Yeah, I mean, look, he just signed $100 million contract for two years. You don't think someone's giving him league minimum to go play with his kids? You know, and think about, you know, as some team that just can't draw anybody. He'll be on the Wizards or something, you know? Maybe not the Lakers, although the Lakers are dumb and he runs the entire organization. So maybe he gave himself a lifetime contract. But, yeah, hey, go across town. Go to the Clippers.
Yeah, yeah.
I could see him finishing off his career, going back to Cleveland. Oh, here it is, Tim, the script. Oh, my goodness, how did I miss the Cleveland thing? He's going back. He's taking his talents back to Cleveland, right? And he finishes off Bronny, James, and whatever his other kid's name is, the three of them on the court at the same time in Cleveland for the last game. Cleveland, don't mind you, they've only won 10 games all year, but it's the last game of the year, and LeBron James dunks it to send off. You know, they have goat heads in the stands. Oh, I can see it now.
Angel, save this tape. We're going to be playing it for you in 3 years because it's going to happen. There's no doubt about that.
If that comes true, I want a job. I want a job as a script writer, okay? I'm a sports writer, okay? But I want a job as a script writer immediately.
Tom, before we take the top of the hour, I know you talked a little bit about it yesterday, the free agency and what we saw happen during that. It was crazy. It seemed like crazy 2 days, and it's kind of mellowed out since then. I know DeMar DeRozan just went to Sacramento, which I think is a nice move for the Kings. Anything surprise you? Did these teams trying to load up to go after Boston, who all Boston did basically, Tommy, was just bring everybody back?
Yeah, I mean, that was the big move. Boston spent $1 billion to bring everybody back. They are attempting to put a dynasty together where, you know, their rival, if you want to call it that, is you know, the laughing stock. Boston's doing everything right. Everything right. Look, Klay Thompson to the Mavericks. We talked about that briefly through text message. I think that's a guy that they needed. I don't think Klay is what Klay once was. I get it. I didn't believe that Luka and Kyrie could carry them by themselves. They were missing an element. Yeah, I think that's a good move, a really good move. Harden to the Clippers, you know, look, he can still play, right? I mean, he can still play. I like that one. That's the Paul George to the Sixers is the big move. Everybody in Philly was going crazy about it. You know, they are wondering if Embiid's kind of coming to the end. Well, now they got their new guy. Yeah, I think Paul George and Maxey re-signing there. So George and Maxey, probably the biggest moves for the – okay, here we go. Tobias Harris, Pistons, look, not terrible. Chris Paul to the Spurs makes a little sense. I kind of like that move. So I think a lot of teams made smart moves, Tim. They filled needs that they needed, but when the team you're chasing – makes the smartest move. If I gave all those teams I just mentioned B's and B pluses, because I think a lot of those moves are pretty much B and B plus moves, if not even A moves, but your competitor makes an A plus move, did you gain anything? And I think that that's where the NBA is. I like a couple of those moves. I think that a lot of them make a lot of sense. I think a lot of them can work out in their favor. The Sixers, particularly if they could stay healthy, I think that that is a chess move that you go, yeah, this is designed to take a shot at Boston, and almost like a boxing match. They hit Boston. They hit them hard. They wobbled them. And they turned around, and Boston just hit them back and knocked them out for the count.
Would it be, in your opinion, is it easier road for Boston to make it back to the finals or for Dallas to make it back to the finals?
Boston by far. I think all they have to go through are weaker teams, with the exception of maybe if this Sixers team kind of gels. Dallas has to go through quite a few teams, including the MVP.
Yeah. My thoughts were that I like the Klay Thompson move as well. I thought that that's great for Dallas. I think it makes them a better team, right? But it doesn't make them an NBA champion team.
No, not at all. And I think they're one of those teams that they got there this year. They exceeded expectations. It's not really a building block for Dallas. It was more of like, hey, everything clicked at the right time. Where for Boston, it's a building block. We're building something seriously big here.
Well, I say we wrap up hour one, Tom. Come back for hour two of the Super Sunday Night edition of Heatwave Sports. And we I would say we have plenty of baseball to go through. Isn't that right, Mr. Barton?
We have a lot of baseball to go through. A lot of trade rumors, things like that. I went over all the trades last night, but I want your opinion on a couple of teams. And then we got a lot of happenings in Major League Baseball today and what's going to be going on. I got to get your thoughts on the All-Star team, too. Yeah. I know we shouldn't let it get to us, but we do let it get to us, too.
All right. Hang on tight. E-Wave Sports Hour 2 back at it here on a Super Sunday night at Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas, 989 FM, 1340 AM. We are getting you ready for a new work week. E-Wave Sports Super Sunday night. Tim Unglesby, Tom Barton, and Angel with you until the midnight hour here on the left coast. Tommy's approaching 2 a.m., or it's 2 a.m. there. It'll be 3, Tom, by the time we're out of here. But that's all right, Tom. How have you been adjusting here? I hear that it's business as usual there in the Barton household. In fact, the newest addition to the family, actually, the pattern for sleep works out for you, right, Tommy? He's doing well.
Yeah, he sleeps from about 1 to 5, which if you have a newborn, that is fantastic, right? My little guy, Finnegan, does not cry, Tim, but he does a lot of grunting. I've never heard a baby grunt. So we sleep next to him. He's got, you know, the bassinet in the bed right beside us, and you hear, you know, right about 5 o'clock in the morning, you're in a nice dead sleep. You've gotten about 3-4 hours of sleep. You hear, is that so instead I don't know if he really knows how to cry yet, but yeah, he certainly learned the art of grunting to get somebody to come and give him some food. Come on, give me some food.
Yeah, works a perfect timetable too for you, 1 to 5.
Yeah, it really does. It's perfectly okay. It's like, wait a minute, you know, 1 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and then all day just keep feeding me all day. Healthy eater, yes, but I'm telling you, baby food or formula at this point is just so expensive. My goodness.
Oh, ridiculous.
You got to spend, for those that don't have a newborn, anywhere between $100 and $200, you know, I would say a week at this point, just on formula, which is, whew, oh boy.
Yeah, wow. Well, just think, Tom, if LeBron's still playing in 18, never mind, right? We'll get him out there.
I got to be honest, we don't have the basketball genes in the Barton family.
During the break, I just started laughing because as fairy tale-ish as it sounds, that very well could happen, what you just described, in Cleveland with his kids.
The minute you said the age, I'm like, oh, that's happening. Oh, that's 100%.
Well, we're going to talk a lot of baseball here in hour two of Heatwave Sports Super Sunday Night Edition. Let's save the All-Star stuff, Tom, for the end. But I know there's things that are more important, and that's just how the races are going to plan out here. With you get the break, then you have the draft, then you have the trade deadline, and then it's just a straight 2 months of divisional matchups getting us to the postseason. And a lot of things we're seeing now as, you know, halfway through the season, right, Tom? Innings starting to pile up on arms. Are the bullpens the best for some of these playoff teams? When we really look at what the trade deadline is going to bring, I'm looking at a lot of bullpen moves here come a couple weeks from now.
Yeah, I said it last night that every team, if you asked every single general manager, they're going to tell you we need bullpen. Right? I mean, every single general manager is going to tell you they need a bullpen. But there are some teams that are getting almost in that desperation mode. And major contending teams. The Yankees, the Orioles to an extent, the Royals, if they want to kind of stay in this thing, very potentially when you're shooting over the National League and you start to, you know, look at them. You know, Philly wants an arm. St. Louis is going to need something if they want to stay in this thing. San Diego, they have maybe the Padres might be the only team that I think have a legitimate shot at the playoffs that are saying, nah, look, our bullpen's probably fine. It doesn't mean that they won't tinker or that other teams won't stand pat, but I think that they would be the only team that could look themselves in the mirror and say, no, we're okay with our bullpen.
Let's kind of move around Major League Baseball then and see. I guess we'll look at the race. We'll look at the division races. And then you tell me, Tom, when it pops up, if somebody's making a move here. And the easiest division to start in is, I call it our division, because our teams reside in that, American League East. So let's start with the bottom. Are Tampa and Toronto, do you think they're out? You say they're out of it.
Yeah, listen, Tim, I did it last night, went over every single team. Yeah, I think Tampa's going to do minor moves, sell. Toronto's a big seller on paper, but I don't think it's going to be the Vlad and Bichettes. I think they're going to sell the Bassetts of the world. Right. You know, so I see both of those teams being minor sellers, not major sellers.
Boston, 49-40, 7.5 back in the division, but the wild card is more attainable.
I don't know what they are. You know, they're a team that needs a lot of help. They're going to need a lot. I don't know if they know what they are yet. They have 3 weeks to figure it out. Because they might just stand pat. But if they stand pat, they're done. Because Houck is going to hit an innings limit. Carter Crawford's going to hit an innings limit. But if they go for it and miss, you know, they're derailing what they have working right now, which is Rafaela and Duran and Cutter Crawford and Houck and Devers. And, you know, they have a nice young core there. So, yeah, I don't know if they know what they are right now. I don't see them making a major move right now. They have 3 weeks to decide who they are.
In that three weeks' time, say they go on a extended losing streak, now you start to sell, right, with your guys like maybe a Jansen who would go somewhere with that contract.
Well, Jansen was going to be on the block anyway because they went out and they picked up Liam Hendricks before the year. Mm-hmm. They knew Liam Hendricks was going to be out until August with Tommy John surgery. And when he was signed, they said, we envision him to be our future closer. The guy's like 36 years old, Tim, right? So the future means we envision him to be our closer once we trade Jansen, right? And for 2025.
You told me something via text when we were talking about the Yankees. And I want to say, Tom, they've lost something like 14 of 18, right? They went from a 3-game lead to a 3-game deficit in the division now. And you told me Boone's lost the dugout. And that means something when you're talking about how many nine lives that these guys have gotten, and I'm including the GM there in Cashman. And you say he's lost it. He's losing the dugout. But they're still 21 games over 500, Tom.
They're 21 games over 500, but the standards are different in New York. I will go with a guy. I've interviewed him a couple of times, one of the nicest guys in sports and probably knows more about the Yankees than anybody that's not wearing pinstripes. That's John Sterling. And I'm sorry, and that's Michael Kay. I was going to say outside of John Sterling, who now retired. It's Michael Kay. And Michael Kay right now is that guy. Michael Kay has changed his tune. For 6.5 years, Michael Kay has defended Aaron Boone at every turn. He's not going anywhere. Don't worry. Blah, blah. This week, he's turned. Not saying that he's calling for his firing, just, yeah, something needs to be done. Not a good answer. That's not a good look. Boone lost it here. And then Boone comes out and gives the same generic answer that we've now heard 3 different times, saying, hey, it's all right in front of us. I think a lot of this is Cashman's fault, but a lot of it is Boone, and Boone will go before Cashman. This is the kickstart that needs to go. Here's the problem with Boone, is that, you know, he's trying to work with a flawed team, but he's making even the most obvious mistakes with that flawed team. So I think Boone has lost the clubhouse, but this is a Cashman problem, not really a Boone problem.
The guys were giving you the business in the group thread tonight about Devers hitting the home runs, right? And you said basically, look, the pitching's been okay. It's the hitting that's slumped now. It looks like Luis Gil is back on track. He had a little slump there a couple weeks ago. Looks like he's back on track. Cortez pitched a gem the other night. They couldn't get him any runs. Actually, they blew it. I think they blew that game, right? Where's the fix here? Rice comes up. He's doing a hell of a job. Where's the fix for New York? What if anybody's making a big time move, Tom? It's the Yankees. Where are they adding? Starting pitching, bullpen, are they adding a bat? What are they doing here?
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't get the text message yesterday when Rice baby went yard 3 times, right? I didn't get any text about that. Yeah. You know, by the way, both the guys that I'm getting, you know what, from both of their teams are almost in the basement.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm getting trash talk by Tigers and Reds fans. Are there worse organizations? The steroid Reds and the pathetic Tigers that send down their number one pick, Torkelson? I mean, come on. But look, the Yankees, you said if there's a team that's going to make a move, it's going to be the Yankees. Tim, I disagree. George is not here anymore. Right? I mean, hey, Cashman's in charge. We've been saying that Cashman's going to make that move year after year after year, expecting the Yankees to still be the Yankees, and the Yankees are not the Yankees. They're not. They're not that team that is going after the dagger. They're not that team that will go trade guys. They're not that team anymore. They held on to Andujar. They held on to Frazier. They held out to Jabba Chamberlain going back. They held on to Phil Hughes going back. They held on. They've been holding prospects. They grab prospects. Cashman grabs an old prospects and will not let them go for anything. If we got offered, if the New York Yankees tomorrow got offered, the number one player in baseball that is a need position, like Bobby Witt, for 2 prospects, they go, you know what? Prospects might be better than him. They're not going to do that. They're going to make minor moves that with a New York market is going to blow it up and to be, this is the fix. No, it's not. The Yankees were banking on the idea that Judge, Soto, and Stanton, to a lesser degree, could carry this offense until Gerrit Cole got back. And when Gerrit Cole got back right after that, Scott Efros was going to come back. And LeMahieu was going to be himself. And they were banking on that. And right now they're lying to themselves. Well, we were doing really well when Stanton was in there. And, you know, we still have some holes and the young guys are coming up. No. It's all just a smokescreen. They're not going to make a big move. They'll get an arm for the bullpen. Maybe they'll get, you know, a utility third baseman, potentially. But you're not going to see a big move coming from New York.
I saw it may have been, you know, it's hard to tell any with rumors nowadays, Tommy, but the name Michael Kopech came up in some Yankee rumor mills. What do you think about adding him to your pen?
Do you want a guy that is 64 complete innings over the last 3 years? Yeah. that has about that are productive. Oh, by the way, the guy that has a 5 ERA this year, guy that is, he's closing for the White Sox. And guess what? Even the White Sox are like, you know what? We can't even handle this. Put John Brebbia in there? No, I don't want him. Yeah, I mean, come on. No. If you want to go after a Kyle Finnegan that's having a fantastic year, sure. You want to go after a Mason Miller that could be a game changer, sure. But if you're going to pay up for a closer, you pay up for a closer, not a guy that is barely closing on the White Sox.
Right. Baltimore, 57-33, 3-game lead. In fact, this week, Tommy, end of the week, heading into the All-Star break, Orioles-Yankees Part 3. We'll get that matchup. What do the birds do here?
The Orioles and the Mariners. Last night I said the Mariners are the team that have to make a move more than any team in Major League Baseball. And I went to bed and I said, well, that was a dumb thing to say because it's the Orioles. And I said that about the Orioles in the offseason, and so did you. They went out, they got Corbin Burns. Well, they're all in now. Baltimore's a first-place team with World Series aspirations, right? They have a stock-full prospect list that you can trade anybody and get any position that you want. You can only covet prospects for so long. Eventually, you have to turn them into something. They're in a position to do that. They don't even have to trade Jackson Holliday or Mayo. Go get rid of a Norby or a Stowers or a Heston, right? You could go down the list, get rid of your 3, 4, 5, 4, 5, 6, and turn this into an absolute dynamic team. The Orioles also are in a unique position where they just got lambasted at one spot with injuries. They lost Kramer. They lost Wells. They lost Bradish. They lost their whole pitching staff. So you have Burns, Rodriguez, and let's hope for something else. You can't win a World Series like that. I do believe that they, you know, everyone's talking about Jazz Chisholm going there. I think that, yeah, you can maybe go look for a center fielder, but it's a luxury. You know, go get a left-handed reliever, maybe a guy for the eighth inning. Yeah, you don't feel comfortable. But if you had to go with a Cano, Kimbrel, and you know, and Wells there, yeah, you could do that, right? The 1-2-3. I'm okay with that. Even who's the other guy in the bullpen? I'm forgetting his name. But they have a foursome in the bullpen that are perfectly fine. It's the problem is the starting pitching. So if Baltimore decides to add a bullpen arm, it's a luxury. If Baltimore decides to add a center fielder, even like a name like Jazz Chisholm, it's a luxury. What Baltimore needs to do is push their chips to the middle of the table and say, we want to go for it this year. Go get a big name starting pitcher because that's what you need.
How about the Central, Royals, Twins, Guardians, Tom? Generally, these teams don't make big-time moves, so they're pieces of the puzzle. I guess the first question is the Royals' fade going to continue? And then it's the Twins and the Guardians. It seems like it's every year it's the Twins and the Guardians, actually. But who goes in on this? Is this Cleveland an opportunity now to maybe sneak in and advance in the playoffs?
Nobody goes all in. Kansas City's going to continue to fall. They just don't have the bats. Their bullpen is kind of a mess outside of James McArthur also. You look at the Twins, they just have never shown you in their history that they are going to make that big move. And they still feel like, hey, if we get healthy, if we can keep Bucks in on the field, who plays about 20 games a year, we can keep Royce Lewis on the field, plays about 20 games a year. If we ever get them both on the field at the same time, man, we got this thing. So they're kidding themselves. And then Cleveland, it's the same thing. You know, every year we say, if Cleveland makes a move for a bat, oh, watch out. And they keep going, nah, it's all right. We don't need to. We'll keep winning the Central, making the playoffs, proving you guys wrong, and then have an early exit. And that's what Cleveland's doing this year. And they're perfectly fine with it. They're not going to go out there. I don't see a big move coming from the Central at all.
I know you said in the West, Mariners need to be busy. But here come the Astros, Tom. They're just 2 games back. Last year's champs, the Rangers, 6 out, 6 under. Where are the Rangers sitting? Are they buyers still at 6 games under, 6 games back?
No, but they're certainly not sellers. I had a couple of guys write us last night talking about who the Rangers could go get rid of, you know. And I'm going, what? They're not selling. Oh, well, you never know. David Robertson could go. They're not selling. No, the more you look at it, you go, no, absolutely not. Not in that division. I don't even think Houston's buying. Look, Alvarez went down, which stinks. They could use a little bit, but I don't think they're going to make a huge move. I keep hearing Vlad Guerrero's going there. You think Houston's making that kind of move? They haven't shown you that they're going to empty a roster to kind of go get one player. The Mariners need a bat. And guess what? The Mariners need about 3 bats. The best player on that team offensively right now is Kyle Raleigh. The guy's batting 200. But Timmy, he's due for 100, he's on pace for 110 RBIs and 30 home runs and 90 runs with a 200 average. Imagine what this guy could do if anybody else is getting on base. We thought Julio Rodriguez being a superstar and Cal Raleigh being his number 2 were going to be not enough offense. Well, they don't even have Julio. So it's just Raleigh. They have got to go get not one bat, but 2 bats. to hold on to this. I think by the next time we talk, Tim, they're in second place, and it wouldn't shock me if they're in third place by the time the trade deadline comes around if they don't do something.
Angels, obviously you need to look for Anderson and Estevez to be moved. A's, everybody talks about Mason Miller. Here's the question. What's the return for a Mason Miller? And then Anderson and Estevez, the only chips the Angels really have left in the cupboard, what's the return on guys like this? Are you really getting anything of value for them?
Mason Miller would cost an exorbitant amount, like a ridiculous amount. The A's know they don't have to do anything right now. They don't have to do anything in the offseason. They could wait till next year. I mean, they're going to hold Mason Miller out there. They're going to dangle him, and they are going to demand top prospects back, not mediocre guys. The A's have consistently been trading middling guys, 3-4 starters, setup men, and getting all right guys in return. No, they want that diamond prospect. You talk about your O's, right? The O's need – they're asking Jackson Holliday for Mason Miller. Mm-hmm. They're asking Jason Dominguez on the Yankees, Mason Miller. I mean, that's what they're doing. They want the number one guy, and no one's going to pay that. Not when you have a market where David Bednar could be had for a little bit less, when Kyle Finnegan could be had for less, for Tanner Scott could be had for less. No one's going to pay that amount. So I don't think Mason Miller's going anywhere.
Angels, Anderson Estevez, what's the return? Middle prospect?
Yeah. If you put them in the same package together, Tim, you could get maybe squeak into a team's top 10. But to me, they're both of them are fetching guys that are roll the dice type of guys. Yeah. Good organizational pieces, but probably in double A. No one close. Or you're going to settle for, a hopeful starter in the majors. You're not getting anything big. Now, if you go and dangle Rengifo when he comes back, he can fetch a pretty good prospect because of his age, because of his salary, because of his position eligibility. But Estevez, I don't think that Estevez walks into most situations as the closer. I think people look at him as a setup guy or at least split time closer. And I think Tyler Anderson in at his best, if you're looking at this long term, you think anyone is looking at Tyler Anderson start game one of a playoff or game two? At best, he's a 3-starter, so they're not going to be giving up too much.
Not that I would want to see it happen. I don't mind Tyler Anderson so much, and I've watched, obviously, Tom, I've watched a lot of him the last couple of years, and he's having a great season this year. He looked good again against Chicago on Saturday. But we talk about when you're going out and you're a team at the top like that and you're adding to what already is a stacked team, albeit Baltimore or New York or Philadelphia or Atlanta, teams like that. If you said, hey, who's starting game 3 in the playoffs for you, and you're going to go Corbin Burns, Grayson Rodriguez, Tyler Anderson, does that work for you?
Yeah, that's fine. I think you nailed it. If it better be an upper echelon team, or it's a team kind of left holding the bag, right? It's a team that goes like a Milwaukee, what they just did with Savali. Mm-hmm. Somebody goes, all right, it's a prospect that even me and you really don't know too well. You get him and you go, I hope that his magic continues. But I think he fits in as a very nice number 3 on a contending team. Look, if you're Baltimore, you're starting game 3, you're probably a little worried. But if you're starting game 4, and I know they don't always use a game 4 starter, but if you're starting game 4, you're feeling really good. So you're in that kind of position. I'll give you the Yankees, for example. To me, he's like a Marcus Stroman. I don't love the fact that he's out there in game 3, but I could live with it. It's fine. If Stroman's starting game 2 for me, I feel like I got problems. If Tyler Anderson's starting game 2 for me, I feel like I got problems.
Would you rather have Marcus Stroman starting game 3 or Tyler Anderson starting game 3? Yankee fan.
Anderson right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, I wouldn't want to give something up for him. It's not enough that I would give something up for him.
Right. National League side, we'll go in the West. Rockies, nothing to talk about really there. So here's my thing before we get to the Padres and Dodgers. You have the D-backs, 500 now, been on a little run. Still, especially with other than Walker, the offense is just dreadful so far. But I look at here's the Giants, right, Tom? 44-47. They're not winning the division, but the wild card, it's very attainable. And you look at the moves they made in the offseason with Chapman and Snell. Now, Snell, again, coming back off the DL. Webb, you have Kyle Harrison, who's pitched well. Cobb's coming back off from the DL. Robbie Ray is supposed to come back in the second half as well, Tommy. Could the Giants cause a little damage here? And do you see maybe them tinkering with pieces to make a run at the wild card?
Yeah, they'll always tinker. I mean, you know, I mentioned this last night. You got to look at the history of teams. They're always going to tinker. But I think that they got to look for a bat. I mean, you know, to me, the perfect fit, they have swung and missed on Aaron Judge, swung and missed on Juan Soto, swung and missed on most of the big bats. Their fans are getting annoyed. And it's an obvious need. They need a bat. To me, the perfect fit, Tim, see if you could get Cody Bellinger for a song. Right? Mm-hmm. See if you can get Bellinger, try to get something out of him. He can play two positions. He fits that kind of, you know, San Francisco vibe. I think he's the under-radar type of player. I just don't know if they're selling. You know, I kept hearing Pete Alonso to San Fran, and I said, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, but I don't know if the Mets are sellers right now. I think San Fran needs a bat, but they don't need a San Francisco move, which is under the radar, nice little player. No, no, no. They have to go out there and really, really, really put their foot down and say, no, boom, here we go. We're here, and we're going after this guy. A guy like a Brent Rooker would be nice. That's kind of the move I expect from San Francisco. It makes a lot of San Francisco type of sense. A Miguel Andujar, who's batting 320, it's nice. It's a San Francisco type of move. But you want to go make a splash? I don't even mean that to be funny with San Francisco, but you want to make a splash? Go get a Bellinger. You want to go make a splash? You want to go appease the fans after missing on Judge and Soto? Go get Vlad. Right? I mean, go make that move. Look, we know who's running that organization. They don't do that.
Padres are hanging around, Tommy, 49 and 45. But I think, again, with San Diego, and the moves need to be made are relevant to what's happening. So Musgrove goes on the 60-day. Darvish is now out with personal problems. Bogarts is still out. Tatis is out. So basically, when I look at this team, I think the bullpen is what you're going to get. You know, it wouldn't surprise me for them to add a big-name closer, but I think there's problems before that. Right now, your pitching staff is Cease and King and Waldron. Maybe they look to add a starting pitcher here. I'm not sure what you do because it's all relevant to when these guys come back, Tom, and you know, San Diego's not afraid to go out and spend the money or move the prospects.
Garrett Crochet makes a lot of sense there. I know he's up against it, you know, as far as, you know, innings ago, yeah, but he's a lefty. He would fit nicely. Big strikeout guy. You look at a rotation of Cease, King, and Crochet, you sneak into the playoffs and people are fearing you. And then you get Bogarts healthy. And then you go out there and you get Tatis healthy. I think San Diego is a legitimate player. Look, I've been bashing the Padres for years, year after year. They make big moves. I go, terrible, awful. What are they doing? And I've been bashing the Padres. I think the Padres are way under the radar right now, and they are in a position to strike. They are within shouting distance of the Dodgers. They are firmly in the wild card hunt. They are right there, and they have dealt with injury on top of injury on top of injury. They are that hidden team no one's talking about, no one is looking at. They have a still very nicely stocked minor league system. I think that that's the team to watch out for, making a big move. How about this, Tim? Crochet and Robert go to San Diego. Changes the complexion of the National League, doesn't it?
Right. And what about the Dodgers? Yamamoto, DL. Bueller, DL. Muncy. Betts is currently on the DL. I think you see the Dodgers add. The Dodgers do this every year. They're going to add something here to the mix.
Yeah, I think the Dodgers absolutely add. I don't know if they love their bullpen bridge to get to Phillips. I don't even know if they love Phillips. I mean, they keep telling us they do, and they keep kind of showing us they do, but I don't even know if they love Phillips. I think they're in the market for that. As far as a bat goes, I mean, look, they are playing Miguel Vargas all the time, and they are mixing and matching, and they'll always be dangerous for bat. But it's the arms. You said it. We don't know what Kershaw's going to be when we get back. Bueller, Goslin, all these guys that they lost and they continue to lose and lose and lose. Who's starting for the Dodgers game 1, 2, and 3 in the playoffs right now, Tim?
I assume you'd say Yamamoto starts a game, right?
All right. He's game one started. Beautiful.
Glasnow will probably be game one, right? Yamamoto will be game two.
Okay.
I don't know. Who's the third starter? Pax, James Paxton?
Okay. I was just going to say, so your 1, 2, 3 starters, you're going with a rookie that has never eclipsed the innings on stateside that he's going to have to eclipse to get there. Number one, Glasnow, who's never pitched more than 150 innings in his life. Okay. We're hoping that he goes 200 plus. Right, if you go to deep playoff run, you go in 200. And James Paxton, who I'm not sure is going to get past 70 innings, right? It's a mess. They have to get an innings eater, a consistent guy. You don't need a Garrett Crochet. And the Dodgers go out there and say, go get, make a big move for Garrett Crochet. People are going to go, oh, wow, Dodgers, here we go. I'm going to go, nope, not the guy you want. You're not looking for that. They need to go out there and get a guy that absolutely they can rely upon, that they know is going to give you the innings, they know is going to be in there, because the Dodgers are nothing but uncertainty. They have a chance to have Bueller come back and look good. Maybe there's a chance that Kershaw comes back and looks good and he gets a spot, and maybe it all works itself out. But Tim, if you're as invested into your team as the Dodgers are, you can't go on hopes and prayers here.
How about the Central? Brewers 5 up on the Cards. Pirates, Reds, and Cubs all 10-plus back, but the wild card again. You know, they're between 5 and 7 games. Any movers here?
I wish the Pirates would buy, because there would be nothing more exciting than to watch Skeens and Jones in game 1-2 against a clearly better team get, you know, shut them down. How about the Dodgers? The Dodgers throwing Glasnow in this way. The Dodgers throwing like James Paxton, and some also ran against James Jones and Skeens and getting knocked out by the Pirates. Oh, that would just be amazing. It would be fantastic. I wish they would, but there's nothing that the Pirates have ever shown to say that they're not going to buy. The Cubs are going to be sellers. They should be sellers. Bellinger should be the first guy off that team. Maybe Nariscos. They have quite a few guys that could be, had. The Cardinals were thought to be sellers. Goldschmidt was gone. Arenado was washed up. That was it. Done. All of a sudden, I think the Cardinals are going to buy. And I think they're going to be dangerous. When you have Sonny Gray starting, and that's a team that could use a Crochet and a Robert. I mean, that would change the complexion there. Milwaukee's just hanging on, but that pitching is eventually going to bite them. Unless they bring up Ashby or bring up Mizorowski and kind of throw them into the mix here. They are getting Devin Williams back, but I don't think the back end of the bullpen is a problem. And then the Reds are perennial losers there. All the talent in the world, they run the bases, they run around like crazy, and they don't win games. So, I mean, the Reds are the Reds. We know what we're getting from them. They should be sellers, but they won't be. They'll hold. Tell us to wait till next year, which they always do. Tell us their guys are young, which they always do. And then they'll wind up, in the 80-game or 90-game suspension because of steroids. I mean, that's what the Reds do. So the Cubs will sell. The Reds will stay. The Pirates will stay. Maybe Bednar goes. Maybe Chapman goes. But basically, I think the Pirates, Reds will stay. Cubs sell. It's going to be interesting. Who makes the big move, St. Louis or Milwaukee? I trust the St. Louis organization more than I do Milwaukee.
Yeah, I do too. And for as bad of a start the Cardinals got off to, Tom, they're in the last wild card right now. And we know the Cardinal organization. They'll if they feel that they're in, they'll make moves to make a run at it.
The Cardinals have the key elements to make you nervous in the playoffs. They have an ace on the mound in Sonny Gray. Make no mistake, guys. Look at his numbers. He's an ace, right? They have an ace on the mound in Sonny Gray. They have a shutdown closer, very potentially a top three closer in the league. Yeah, in Helsley. They have a bridge guy in Jojo Romero and Kittering. Two bridge guys, really. So they got a good back end of the bullpen. They have an ace. Where's their concern, Tim? Well, I worry about their hitting. Starting to come around, though, and Tommy Edman's getting healthy. And I worry about that, you know, the depth in the rotation. If they went out and they made a move, I think they almost have to make a double move to make me buy into that they could do anything big. Look, they'll make the playoffs, but I'm talking about making, you know, making a splash. What do they need to make that kind of splash? Yeah, I mean, I said it before, Crochet and Robert. What about the Cardinals going out there making a huge splash for Vlad and Bassett or Gausman and Springer? I mean, there are moves to be made out there. The Cardinals, with a very good minor league system, could make those moves.
And then the AL East. All right, Tom, here we go. Nats, Marlins. Any names moving here? I don't see the Nationals selling, so they're just
Tim. I said it last night. I think these are the two biggest sell teams. I think the Nats are going to move their entire bullpen. Finnegan, Harvey, Floro, and Law. I think they're all gone.
Oh, they're only five games out.
I know, and I have a bet on them to make the playoffs. I'm already looking good for their win total. I'm nervous. They took forever to bring up James Woods. They did just DFA Senzel, so maybe they're going for it. I love their pitching. Irvin stepped up. Parker looks good. Gore looks great. I mean, I hope they go for it. I love them. But you have to look at their organization and say, look, I think we have to look ourselves in the mirror and say, even if we make the playoffs, are we doing anything this year? No, our team is built around the young arms I just mentioned, James Woods, Abrams. These guys are young. If we can get a massive return for this bullpen, blow up the bullpen, get rid of all four guys, I think they might do it. Law over 30. Finnegan, as he's been electric this year. Someone's going to overpay for Finnegan. As great as he's been, he's going into his year 32 season, right? Harvey had looked good up until recently, and Floro is untouchable. He's untouchable right now. If you're the New York Yankees, you know, how are you not going out tomorrow and going to, look, Washington, we'll just give you some good prospects for your entire bullpen. So I think they're selling, and I think Miami is already, I'm stunned they all haven't already unloaded everyone. Scott's gone, Luzardo's gone, Jazz is gone. Berger might be gone. I mean, I think they're going to unload most of that team. I really do. I think it's a fire sale of all fire sales there in Miami.
Mets 44-44. They're also in the race for the wild card. They're always buyers, right, Tom?
Yeah, that's the thing. Both of these teams, the Phillies and the Braves, they may not need a lot, but they'll go out there and they'll try to get something. I don't know if the Braves can fix what is ailing them, and that is the fact that Matt Olson and Austin Riley have come back down to earth. They're missing Ronald Acuna. So I don't know if a trade fixes that, but they'll try. And Philly, same thing. What is the problem in Philly? The problem in Philly is not much, right? I mean, if you're going to pinpoint to a problem, let's just get these guys back healthy. We still haven't seen really a lot of games of Turner and Harper healthy on the same field together. So go get these guys healthy. I expect both teams to make a move because it's in their nature to make moves, but I don't think either team needs to make moves.
Are you, if you're a Philly fan, are you comfortable with Jose Alvarado being that guy?
No, but I'm very comfortable with Jeff Hoffman being the guy. And I think they made the switch this week. He's got three saves in a week, does Hoffman. Hoffman's had 2 years running now of better numbers. I think Kekering is a better closer as well. Alvarado, you know, you could throw him in there. It's one of those rare teams. You know me, I like a dominant closer. It's one of those rare teams that I could sit back and say, you know, if they decided to go closer by committee, leaning towards Hoffman as the guy, Alvarado every now and then and Kekering every now and then, I think you're okay with that. But I don't have faith in Alvarado being the World Series closer, but I do have faith in Hoffman. If you look at what Hoffman's done the last couple of years, you should have faith in him too.
So I had Philadelphia, Atlanta in the NLCS with the right to play in the World Series, which, if you remember from the previous show, we both have Philadelphia moving on to the series. But if you look at depth in the rotation, we always go back to the rotation, right, Tom? Freed, Chris Sale, Charlie Morton, and mind you, the Braves have lost starting pitching early in the year. But right now it would be Freed, Sale, Charlie Morton going up against Zach Wheeler, who's been lights out, right? Aaron Nola, who we'll talk about in a few minutes here, and Ranger Suarez. Do either of these teams maybe add a piece, a fourth guy, Tommy? I'm not talking about the Taiwan Walkers of the world who started out great and have just faded badly. Or do you see maybe Atlanta or Philadelphia adding to the pen? I know you just went through the guys to close it out, but what about the middle relief? You know, these guys are, you talk about tinkering. These two teams are tinkering with they're in the luxury like the Yankees and the Orioles that they can tinker where they need to. They don't have to build all these different parts to get to the end of the line because we expect them to be there. But if you're looking for guys to add solid pieces, would it be in the rotation for both these squads?
If you listen to WIP in Philadelphia, the radio station down there, that you got to love the callers. It just about every other caller wants Mason Miller. There's been rumors about Miller. There's been everything that Miller is coming. I don't think he's needed. But maybe they add somebody. The thing is if you go get a – look, if you go get a Mason Miller, are we sure that he's better than Hoffman? Because he doesn't have better numbers. Right? I mean, that's what we're asking. So you're just going to – you're going to overpay for this guy to get thrown into a closer rotation? I think they will I do. I think that they're going to add something. I don't think it's in the rotation of Philly. I think it is probably in the bullpen, but I don't believe it's a closer. To me, you're not going to pay the exorbitant amount for Mason Miller. Finnegan's not getting traded within the division. And Bednar wouldn't be your closer if he came on. Could I see them going to get like an Aroldis Chapman, a lefty specialist kind of guy? Maybe something like that. I don't think Philly makes a huge move because they don't have to make that move. They're not going to pay up, so I don't think pitching is where it's going to be for them unless it's under the radar, something minor, something bridge type of thing. Atlanta's different. I think Atlanta is worried about the depth in their rotation. I do believe that with AJ Minter coming back this week, that Atlanta's bullpen just got a little bit better. Jimenez has been fantastic all year. Iglesias is shut down. I don't know if they add anything there that would be substantial. But an arm, Atlanta's always ready to add an arm. Atlanta's always ready to add an arm. And if they believe that Riley and Olsen are going to continue to struggle this year, then they have to say to themselves, look, we have to win with pitching. They also have to believe in the back of their head, Tim, and this is something that nobody's talking about. Do we think Chris Sale is going to go the 200 innings? We talk about the young guys all the time, innings limit. Chris Sale hasn't pitched this many innings in a long time, Tim. He's been injured a lot. He's a frail, thin guy. He's getting into the dog days of summer. I think Atlanta, in the back of their heads, if they have a good GM, and you know that they do, you know that he's thinking, what if we lose Sale? If we lose Chris Sale, we could kiss the division goodbye and probably tumble out of the playoffs. And I'm being honest here. So I think Atlanta goes and gets an arm, because they're not confident that Chris Sale is going to be able to last.
Tom, as a bridge to the All-Star game, give me some fantasy advice here. If you own Chris Sale in a fantasy league, I move him.
I would have moved him already. I didn't think he was going to last this long. So, I mean, look, he's a guy that it depends on. The format depends on what your team setup is. You're gambling, right? If you have him, you're gambling that he's going to do what he hasn't done in years. He's going to defy all the optics. He's going to defy everything. And he's going to be there when you need him, most in September. But with that being said, Tim, he's done it all year. He's come back. He's come back from the doldrums. He's come back from what he looked like. He has been probably the best pitcher in the National League. He's done it. And from a fantasy perspective, it's going to get you wins because that team is going to keep winning behind him. He is a lefty, and teams struggle with lefties. I mean, it's a hard sell for me. I like Chris Sale. I guess it would depend on the return, but I am very concerned that he's going to throw a pitch during one of his 14 strikeout games, and we're going to see the last of Chris Sale this year.
And in my case, this is free agent year. I should probably move him now, right? Is that what you're saying?
I would have moved him 2 months ago. I would have jumped ship 2 months ago.
32 first-time Major League Baseball All-Stars will play in that game next, is it Monday or Tuesday, in Texas, home of the champs. Where do you want to go with this, Tom? Are we going snubs first? Are we going the guys that shouldn't be here? Or even
let's
close
go
to
guys that
here?
Shouldn't. Let's go guys that shouldn't be here, because every time we talk about snubs, people don't say who you would remove, right? Yeah. And that always drives me nuts. Oh, well, okay. These 11 guys were snubbed. All right, cool. Who you're removing, right? So I think we should go with who should be removed.
Okay. Let's go. You start it.
All right. Let's start it with the starters on the American League, right? I know, of course, you know, it is what it is. I don't really have a major problem with anybody except Vlad Guerrero. He's just not having that year, should not be on this team, should not be starting. He shouldn't be on the team. Forget about starting. Everybody else I'm okay with in the American League as starters, except for Vlad. National League, I don't have a real problem other than Trey Turner only played kind of half a year, and Fernando Tatis is there because of name recognition. I'm real happy that Profar got in, but I would say Tatis I would remove. Turner's a hard guy to remove, but he has played limited time. So I don't have a real issue here, Tim, with the starters.
Right, and those were the vote. The fan vote are the starters.
Yes.
Yeah.
The backups, Carlos Correa should be nowhere near this team. Nowhere near this team. Marcus Simeon's hitting like .226, should be nowhere near this team. In the National League, Pete Alonso should be nowhere near this team. Absolutely not. And Mookie Betts somehow made the team. I get it. He's going to be replaced anyway, so that's okay. But I think maybe Alonso would be the guy I'd be harping on if Carlos Correa and Marcus Simeon were on the team. Neither one of them should be. You go to the backup outfielders. I'm fine with all of them. You got to remember, everyone has to have one selection, so that's okay. You know, a guy like a Brian Reynolds probably shouldn't be on the team, but who are you going to kind of go with? So, you know, they make sense. Ozuna and David Fry, I like both of those selections. But for me, I don't have any screaming guys, except for the very few that I mentioned on that wavelength. Alonso. It probably the guy that I'm the most annoyed with.
Yeah. Biggest snubs.
Oh. Yeah. You give me your snub here. Who's your biggest snub? Yeah, Enola. Enola's shocking, too, because he's from a big-name team.
I thought Enola. Yeah.
I'll tell you, here's one from your team. I'm surprised you didn't mention it. No one's hotter in the league right now than Anthony Santander. Mm-hmm. What about Brent Rooker? How is Brent Rooker not on this team? Santander and Rooker, to me, are the two that jump right off the pages. How are they not here? You could even argue, we mentioned Kenley Jansen. You could even argue Kenley Jansen. And the biggest snub that I have, Tim, is the guy I would remove. The reason why I'm so upset about the Pete Alonso thing is Christian Walker should be on this.
Yeah, he's been hammering the ball.
Christian Walker has better across the board numbers.
I thought
than
maybe
Pete Alonso.
You know,
did I lose you, Tim?
No, I was going to say, I know each team has to have one, right? And my thing is for Washington, we go back to the Nationals. I think Irvin should be on that team and not Abrams. You know, Irvin's sub 3 ERA. He's pitched wonderful. Abrams has all-star stats.
I think Kyle Finnegan should be on the team. Right? I mean, yeah, but you're right. Irvin, it was a numbers crunching at that point. I love what the guy's doing. So that's your bit. By the way, Chris Gwynn said Jordan Westberg is his biggest snub. Tim, you had an opportunity to rally for both of your Orioles. I picked Santander. Chris Gwynn picked Westberg. You didn't go down the Orioles way. What about Grayson Rodriguez?
Yeah, 11-3 on the year.
I think Ben Rice is a big snub. I'm just being honest with you after this weekend.
He didn't have enough bats to qualify, did he, Tom?
Yeah, you don't need enough at bats. Look at Trey Turner.
Yeah. I felt five Orioles should have made it, but I didn't want to be a homer on the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the first place team, probably the best team in the American League. Yeah, I don't mind if you put multiple guys on there. Nobody has the numbers that Santander has right now. But again, you got to remove somebody. I didn't have a major problem with the American League. Alonso, I mean, if you remove Simeon and give me Westberg, I'd be fine with that. And then, Correa would have been the other guy. But Alonso for Walker, to me, that's the biggest, eye-popping snub. But what are you going to do? I mean, the Mets need somebody, I guess.
I think Correa was the Twins' only selection as well, right? Wasn't he the only guy
from
Minnesota?
Yeah, and he got hurt today, so he'll probably be removed.
So do you remove him? Do you have to replace him with a fellow twin because they only had one?
No. Okay. He still gets to go to the All-Star game, actually.
Yeah, you're right. He's still considered an All-Star. He just doesn't play. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I in closing, 32 first-time All-Stars, I love it because people want to talk about how baseball is boring and all these new rules, and it's not fun to watch. And we all can sit here and disagree with that till we're blue in the face. But the fact that you see what's coming in the future, Tom, with all these first timers, it's the most they've ever had by far. And they're most, like you said, most of them are well deserved. So it really shows how the sport is hitting a boom period, I think. And, that's good for guys like us, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you see the fervor, you see people getting excited. I think it's going to be a great summer because Judge is going to battle for 60 again. It's going to get real interesting real fast. I just can't wait for the trade deadline. It's been a fun couple of trade deadlines over the last couple of years here.
All right, Tom, tell everybody about the website and all the great things you're doing during the week.
All right, another beautiful day at TomBartonSports.com today. If you guys went and checked it out, Arizona plus 150, Arizona over in the game as well. Really, really fun day. And I've had a great month. I've had a great season so far. You guys could jump on board. It's TomBartonSports.com. If you sign up today, I'm giving you right up until the first college football game of the season. So you get all the NFL preseason, all Major League Baseball at TomBartonSports.com.
All right, Tommy, have a great week. Back at it next Sunday, right? I believe it's Sunday. I'm pretty sure. No, we're off next week. We're back the 21st. So a little
back
time
on
off
the 21st.
There, Tom.
Yeah, back on the 21st.
All right. Well, we'll be able to talk some Major League Baseball draft because that'll have happened by then. And more as we get closer to the deadline. Enjoy your time off, sir.
Enjoy the All-Star game, guys.
For Tom Barton, Tim Unglesby Angel with you as we come to a close on a Super Sunday night. We'll talk to you guys again on the 21st. Enjoy the All-Star game. Enjoy sports in general. We'll talk to you then. It's Heatwave Sports only on Fox Sports Radio.